Okay, as we mentioned, we're from Alberta, so we'll be talking about what's happening concretely in Alberta right now in terms of mobilizing around the G8, but also what is happening more generally in Alberta. And something that struck me this evening is that when Andrew was talking, or Andrea or Shannon, they could have been talking about Alberta, or they could have been talking about almost anywhere, because I think more and more we're seeing the same sort of universalized picture of privatization, liberalization, and it's pretty dismal in a lot of ways. And so I think just before I start talking about that same story in Alberta, that same sort of dismal picture, just reinforcing that, something I've really seen and noticed on the caravan so far is that as we go to all these different communities, continually seeing the exact opposite of that. There isn't uniformity, there's tons of creativity, there's tons of ways that people are resisting all these agendas. So I think, again, that's just one way of empowering ourselves or sort of resisting these agendas, because as I sort of talk about Alberta, it will be that same picture, but just on the sort of more positive side of things, that people are resisting these, and that is our strength in many creative and different ways. And as Andrea talks about the ABCs of the G8, we also have a few ABCs in Alberta. A is obviously for Alberta, but it's also similar to, as Harris calls, the common sense revolution. We have the Alberta advantage. And sort of Klein was sort of the leader in introducing all of these reforms into Canada. Alberta is also known sometimes as Ralph's World or Ralph's Kingdom, as he likes to think of it anyways. And in one of the richest provinces in Canada, minimum wage is $5.90 an hour. Klein right now is in the process of supporting all of the reforms of the Mazankowski report to privatize healthcare in Alberta, and we did see that 2 years back, and Alberta did resist very strongly in the push to resist the privatization of healthcare. So we also see massive welfare reforms, you see massive cuts to education. We just had a huge teacher strike in Alberta, so again, the similar stories that we're hearing from every province, as similar as happening in BC now, we're also seeing in Alberta, and we have for many years. Klein's in his third term. So I guess part of resisting the G8 for us is resisting all the things in Alberta that we see on a day-to-day basis. And sort of the B of Alberta is just kind of a joke one. It's about bears, because there's going to be a lot in Kananaskis, and that sort of things people are hearing about Kananaskis. And C is just for conservative with a capital C, because Alberta, as many of you may know, is an extremely conservative climate, and it's a hard climate to organize politically. And there has been some resistance in Alberta, but I think part of organizing around the G8 is building stronger coalitions in Alberta to resist the G8 in our sort of everyday lives. And so we're going to talk about those things this evening, and also just one thing sort of also related to the Alberta advantage is that security for the summit, just for the city of Calgary alone, is costing $40 million. So again, that's just something we like to think about in terms of when there's no money for education, when there's no money for healthcare, that in Alberta, again, we're seeing structural adjustment policies where money has been taken from healthcare, from education, and in order to sort of fight this debt, so that we do have sort of the things that the G8 is implementing in other countries where being implemented in our own as well. So I'm just going to pass it over to Mike, who's going to talk a little bit more. We're going to go back.
All right. I'd really like to stress in talking about organizing around the G8 in Alberta that when we first found out that we were going to be hosting this summit in Kananaskis, that it wasn't a foregone conclusion at all that we wanted to do summit-style organizing in Alberta. There were a lot of questions. A lot of people from Alberta mobilized to come out to Quebec City last spring, and a lot of people came back with a lot of questions. What's going on in Quebec now after the summit? You know, has local organizing been hurt by this? And was this really a valuable political exercise? And a lot of people who stayed behind in Alberta and did solidarity actions felt really frustrated and wanted next time around for the solidarity actions away from the summit site not to be just something to do if you couldn't make it. They wanted it to be something, again, more valuable. So we were really trying to get away from this formulaic type protest going into our first post council last August. We talked about the possibility of hosting a mobilization to Calgary, to Kananaskis, not hosting one at all. And we ended up deciding on the two locations. But there was a really strong focus on thinking strategically, thinking about how we could have a tactical success and a maximum political effect, and how we could really use our creativity as a tool to, again, get away from the formula. there was a strong desire, as Fiona talked about a bit, to build coalitions in Alberta and to build some long-term solidarity and lasting resistance that would last for a long time past June. And certainly in my community, there was a desire to build these coalitions, but on the condition that we wouldn't have to sacrifice really strong anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist principles to work together. We were really trying to focus on tactics that would allow us to live some of the alternatives to capitalism at the same time as we were taking concrete steps towards implementing them all the time. And we're also trying to get away from the divisions that sometimes tend to come up when local activists who are working on local everyday struggles are pitted against activists who are organizing these in the anti-globalization movement, as it's called, organizing these summits. I really feel that this is a false polarization and that it's very divisive. These are often the same people. I don't think that summit protests need to be detached from local organizing. And I believe that this division creates a completely false, moralistic hierarchy that in turn creates a really fucked up dynamic. And in addition, the idea that every project that we undertake has to appeal to every person, I feel that this undermines people's ability to create and engage in projects that do appeal to them, and it's actually a very condescending attitude to take. I think that privilege needs to be addressed, but I don't think that this kind of attitude addresses privilege. And I don't think either does the argument that summits are elitist. This argument, I feel, is really about appealing to guilt, often white guilt, male guilt, which I'm personally sick of, and I think everyone is sick of guilt in all its variants. If activists want to fuck up the G8, then like all the more power to them, so long as they realize that what they're doing is not the movement, and that what they're doing is just one form of work in this movement, a movement that includes people who will never go to a protest, will never go to a summit, but who will and do cheer when they see activists confronting police at summits. As an anarchist person of color, I've been accused sometimes of like somehow selling out or abandoning my people because I'm working on organizing this kind of summits, and I think that that's quite oppressive. I think that people are capable of determining where their energy is valuable and should do the work and use the tactics that they have personally determined to be most effective. Obviously, I feel that there are some problems with hosting summits at all. I think that the roots of oppression are often not addressed in organizing around these things, and when they are, they're addressed often superficially. That needs to be worked on. I feel that the history of resistance and the resistance in the Global South and resistance of Indigenous people in North America is often not recognized and not learned from as much as it could be. And I think people don't always recognize that although summits protests may be necessary as part of this movement, they're not sufficient and they're not the more important than other forms of work. I think that they present one moment that really needs to be seized, but there are many moments every day that should also be seized to fight capitalism. It's not like all of a sudden there's more steak to smash because there's a summit. Like, there's lots of it all the time. And I think that there's often a lack of discernment when choosing tactics and not very much analysis of what the tactics that we choose actually accomplish. I myself and many other people have the privilege to choose which tactics we're going to use. And I think that choosing tactics that are ineffective, considering that we do have this privilege, is not okay. The system really puts us in a place where it's very difficult to survive and quite impossible to truly thrive. We were down at the OCAP office in Toronto last week speaking with some people there, and I really liked the way one woman put it. She said that, you know, it's like this system puts us in a place where we're having the shit kicked out of us on a daily basis. And if you're getting beat up on the street, are you going to lay there and take it and ask politely for a person to stop? Or are you going to get up and fight back? I think, you know, I know what I would do. And I think that we need to think about our tactics at these summits and every day in our struggles. What kind of tactics are we using? And are they tactics that are truly going to make someone stop kicking our ass? And I'm going to tag team back.
Can you keep the comments to the end just so we have enough time to let everyone speak?
Should I sit down?
Yeah, and then afterwards we'll take questions and comments. Thanks.
So I'm going to tag team off or on here again and talk about what is sort of happening concretely in terms of mobilization in Alberta and sort of some of the rationale and discussion around that. One of the first things, as Andrea mentioned, there is a conference that is being held 4 days before the summit in the city of Calgary, and that will be sort of having panel discussions and different speakers come and talk about different issues related to the G8, sort of directly or indirectly. There also has been a call out for people to mobilize to the city of Calgary, which is the closest urban center to the actual summit site. So there has been a large march planned for the city of Calgary under the theme of globalization, anti-war, and Klein. So sort of trying to address the different layers and different issues that are happening in ways of resisting the G8. And something else that Marika and I are both involved in organizing in Alberta is Solidarity Village, and this will happen close to the summit site. It will happen in Kananaskis and will run from the 21st of June till the 29th. And sort of, it's going to be days of training and music and speakers and discussions. And the idea around sort of the Solidarity Village is to create an autonomous zone and to create a space that is a place where we can share our stories in our region, where we can share the issues that we're all working on, and to build, as we mentioned a few times already, long-term coalitions that go way past the G8. And we also see it as trying to develop or live an alternative to capitalism during the actual summit. So that we're not merely registering dissent or protesting, but we're trying to create something that's outside just the protest itself. And we did feel that it was really important to be close to the summit site because we felt that it is important to let the leaders, and in some ways to let the entire world know that they leaders can't go sort of about doing business as usual or retreating where leaders can be leaders. So we felt it was important to have a presence near the site, and that's why there was another sort of additional call out to the actual summit site. And again, we're hoping to strike some balance with Solidarity Village and having sort of, again, the disruption of the meeting, but also sort of the antithesis to the G8, where we're living some of the ideals and visions that we have and the different ideals and visions that we have. And another thing that's really important about Solidarity Village is that it is on First Nations land. And all of the Kananaskis area is First Nations land that has been taken by the government. And it's Stoney Reserve, or it is Nakota, Dakota, and Lakota Sioux land. And this, again, is a huge part of the struggle in Alberta, and I think throughout all of Canada, in recognizing the history of First Nations and in recognizing sort of all of our implication in that history, and again, a way of resisting the G8. Because I think as sometimes as anti-globalization activists, we forget history, and we forget that history goes way past the beginning of neoliberalism, or way past Seattle, or way past Quebec. And I think that, again, resisting the G8 means bringing history back in, and it's a way to disrupt, a way to become subjects or to change history. And I think this is something we need to do in Alberta. And again, it also means drawing international media that will be there to what is happening and the land issues that are happening in Alberta. And also, I think looking at First Nations issues in Alberta also helps us to look at the G8 in Africa and look at the NEPAD partnership. Both are sort of how I would see as tools of colonialism. Both are trying to access natural resources, extract resources. And I see as striking similar to treaties that were signed in Alberta in the late 1800s and to NEPAD, this similar idea of partnership. And it's interesting that Jean Chrétien, who was the former Minister of Indian Affairs, who put out a white paper which was retracted in 1969, but I mean a quote from that was, "The ultimate goal of our Indian policy is the integration of Indians into the general life and economy of the country." And now, if we look at NEPAD, we see that similar language in integrating Africa into the global economy. So I think this, recognizing that, is a way to, again, look at what's happening in Alberta, look at what's happening in Canada, and resist sort of on local ways. And again, looking at Africa and Canada and drawing parallels, sort of the apartheid system in South Africa was built on the reserve system in Canada. So I think, again, if we're to resist the G8, we need to look at our history and resist the ways that it's happening within our own country and in our own lives. And I think another really important part about Solidarity Village that we're trying to work on is looking at environmental alternatives, because in Alberta there's a huge oil and gas industry. It's alive and well, and so we're really hoping to have environmental alternatives within the actual site itself, solar power, gray water management systems. So again, another way of locally resisting the G8. Another sort of concrete action that's happening in Alberta, or is an anti-capitalist, sort of a similar theme that's been discussed throughout our discussions, and that is that we're having an anti-capitalist group in Alberta that is calling for a strong presence in Kananaskis and in Calgary, and we feel again that it's critical to have an anti-capitalist presence. Because we do not support reform of the G8, we do not support for reform of means of aid, but we're really, because part of this caravan is looking at the roots of resistance and looking at what people are doing in local communities and linking that to global struggles and linking that to things like the G8. So the anti-capitalist call is also looking at what are the root causes of this system, and reform is not. If we are only addressing things by reform, we're not addressing those root causes. And another thing is that the anti-capitalist call advocates tactics that are disruptive. And when we talk about disruption, we talk about physically being there to disrupt the G8 meeting. But we also mean disruption in the form of disrupting the ideas of bringing disorder to, disrupting power symbols, disrupting imperialism, disrupting patriarchy, disrupting sexism, disrupting heterosexism, and also disrupting means seeking new questions and sort of looking at ourselves as a movement and addressing those things within our movement as well. And also, I guess, with the anti-capitalist call out, we're hoping to build this sort of presence and process long after the G8 is gone, because again, we really need to have this sort of analysis in Alberta as a way to sort of resist Klein and resist the things that are happening. And finally, as sort of Marika's already talked about, we do embrace sort of a respect for the diversity of tactics, particularly on the basis that not everyone has, again, the privilege to choose their tactics or to choose the issues they're going to work on, and have a lot to lose sort of by being involved in different forms of activism. So really, again, recognizing those things, and I'm going to pass it back to you.
All right. I'm just going to go on to, before we finish, to tell you guys a bit more about Kananaskis country. Now, as Fiona mentioned, it's Nakota Sioux land. It's a national park about 100 kilometers west of Calgary in the Rocky Mountains. It's about a 4,000 square kilometer area. And you might have seen pictures on the internet, or you know, seen Gretchen talking about the pristine environment that Kananaskis is, and it's not quite that. I think one of the reasons that they put it there, aside from trying to get away from protest, was also because it's a quite convenient criticism for them to be able to say, to accuse activists and environmentalists of, you know, they're coming out here trampling all over the wilderness, ruining it, and here they are, they say they're environmentalists. I think this is quite a ludicrous criticism, considering the amount of environmental destruction that the G8 policy is responsible for all over the world, and especially hypocritical, considering that 50% of Kananaskis Park, which is a so-called protected area, was just given over to Spray Mills Timber Company, which is a timber company in Alberta with a really appalling, unsustainable history. The park is full of hotels, golf courses, ski hills, parking lots. It's a playground for the rich. It's not something that most people can afford to enjoy. And it's only getting worse. 7 new projects have just been approved in the area. Now, the G8 leaders are meeting in a Delta Hotel in the middle of Kananaskis Park. I don't know if you guys out here have heard about what's been going on with Delta Hotels, but they have a bad history, too, of taking indigenous land and building these expensive resorts on it. Just across the border in BC, there's a new Sun Peaks development. It's a resort being built on Shuswap land, and it's a big struggle ongoing out there, and we're really trying to incorporate that struggle into what we're doing too. We have been invited, as Fiona mentioned, by the Nakota Sioux to come and join us on their land. It's really exciting. Soon after our first spokes council we had last August, people came to us. We didn't have to go out there asking, you know, can we use your land? People came to us, inviting us to come and build something together with them because we have a lot of goals in common and we thought we could share a common resistance. We've been working on a coalition with these people. We've had meetings with their elders and received blessings from the elders out there. And it's been an extremely positive thing. And I think that it's only the coalition is only going to be strengthened by working on the GA together. I think part of the reason it's going so well is because we have a long history of positive relationships between non-Native activists and Native activists in Alberta. You guys might have heard about up at Cold Lake, the Primrose Air Weaponry Range in Alberta, where the Dene Sutsene people have been kicked off their land for the building of an air weapons range where, you know, nuclear cruise missiles and things like this are built and tested. People are currently squatting their own land. Sometimes they blockade the supplies that are coming in and out of the weaponry range, but it's a really nasty thing. Also, we've been working with the Lubicon people. A lot of activists have been in Alberta. The Lubicon people, you've probably heard about them. They've been embroiled in legal battles since the 1930s just to be recognized as a First Nation. There's been a lot of ties built between environmentalist communities and activists, Native activists in Alberta, working to get the oil and gas and timber companies out of traditional land. And it's been just such a great thing coming together around the G8, strengthening relationships that already exist, and learning from the history, the hundreds of years of fighting for self-determination that these people have. As well as First Nations, many other pre-existing struggles have become involved in G8 organizing in Alberta. Police brutality groups have got on board. People who are fighting the war at home that's being carried out every day on the street by police who are implementing the new anti-terrorist legislations. The HIV/AIDS community, it's a community that I work in that is getting involved. These people are pissed off at the G8 because of the G8 support for the trade-related intellectual property rights that allows pharmaceutical companies to patent drugs for 20 years, and that makes the price of the drugs go up about 10 times, which makes them unaffordable for people in Africa as well as people in Canada who are dying because they can't afford drugs that would prolong their lives. Anti-poverty groups are getting on board, people who are fighting Klein's fascist policies in Alberta. As Fiona talked about, Klein is really leading the tide of neoliberal reforms in Canada. We saw 63% cut to welfare over 3 years. We pay healthcare premiums every month in Alberta, and they keep going up. Our energy has been privatized. My bill went up about $40 a month. And yeah, it's a bad scene. The immigrant community is getting involved through, I volunteer at the Edmonton Center for Newcomers, and people there are getting involved in this GA coalition. It's an organization that does a lot of casework and support for people, and these people have been particularly screwed over by policies since September 11th that are becoming more and more racist. I can think of one woman, she's a political refugee from Ethiopia, and she's been here since last summer. Her kids were supposed to be here by Christmas. They're still not here. What's going on there? And these people all know that their everyday struggles are part of fighting the G8, and that what they're fighting on the street and in their lives every day has everything to do with G8 policy. This coalition is made up of people whom the system has failed, and people who know that systemic failure is not going to be fixed by systemic reforms. And I'm going to finish with a quote that I think brings a lot of everything together, and it's something that Lorenzo Kumboa Irwin said. He's an activist in the States and a former member of the Black Panther Party. And he said, "These men are a gang of international gangsters getting together in secret to make plans to commit murders, fleece the people, and starve us to death." And maybe if you think about it in those terms, you can develop a certain passion for fighting those bastards.
One thing to about Alberta too, like we're here again in solidarity and building sort of what we're calling communities of resistance. So we're not here necessarily to mobilize people to Alberta, but really mobilizing people to take the capital and take the region nearest you. So just to put that in perspective as well.